Good morning, everyone. Welcome to everyone here in church. Welcome to those who come particularly for Remembrance Sunday. Welcome to our community online via our web camera, and to anyone who just happens to listen in at some time in the future. We begin with our opening words. Amid the noise in our lives, we take this moment to sit in silence, to give thanks for another day, to give thanks for all those in our lives who have brought us warmth and love. We give thanks for the gift of life, and we commit ourselves to fully living this gift of life. Our chalice lighting. We light our chalice in memory of those who gave their tomorrows so that we can live in freedom, and in memory of all victims of wars and conflicts. Let us pray. How beautiful it is when people fearlessly and non-violently stand up against injustice. We give thanks for the examples of Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., and those who worked for peace in our country. We thank the politicians who 20 years ago went that extra mile for peace. May their actions inspire today's politicians as they grapple with a divided society. How beautiful it is when people mediate disputes and act to build bridges. How beautiful it is when people look beyond the surface to recognize the common humanity we all share. We give thanks for community leaders who reach out in peace to those who are seen to be different or on another side. How beautiful it is when we work to build peace, when people who are prepared to respect the views and beliefs of those who think differently than they do, when people are prepared to speak their truth quietly and with respect, and to hear other people's truths. May we show our respect for differences in the words we use, in the tone of our voices, and in our willingness to change. How beautiful it is when people apologize for past wrongdoings, seek forgiveness, and work for the restoration of broken relationships. Jesus blessed the peacemakers and called them children of God. How beautiful it is when people work for peace. May we all be workers for peace in our lives. Amen. Now, can we read together words in the back of the hymn book that try to articulate the aims of this congregation? Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve humankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine. This do we covenant with each other and with God. Mary is our reader this morning.
Good morning. Donna Falls is a poet who meditates and practices yoga. And whenever I read her poetry, it reminds me just to be present, to stop trying, and to know that I am enough. For me, this poem invites me to breathe, to be still, and to be present. And it's called Just This Breath. Settle in the here and now. Reach down into the center, where the world is not spinning, and drink this holy peace. Feel relief flood into every cell. Nothing to do, nothing to be, but what you are already. Nothing to receive, but what flows effortlessly from the mystery into form. Nothing to run from or run toward. just this breath. Awareness knowing itself as embodiment. Just this breath. Awareness waking up to truth.
Now we invite Denise, who's the new chair of our congregation, to lead our service where we remember young men from this congregation who died in the Great War. Denise.
Good morning. A very solemn occasion, thinking about those who have died in conflict, both specifically in the First World War, which was, I think, how the Remembrance Day was first instigated, but conflicts all over the world and throughout our history. There have been too many. In this congregation alone, we have had a number of young men who volunteered to fight and paid the ultimate price. They were loved and remembered, and we continue to remember them. Their names were William Wilkes Fitzgerald, who died at age 24, Walter Osborne Varian, who died at age 23, Frederick Edwin Baldwin Faulkner, who died age 22, George Stride Faulkner, who died age 19, William Sidney Kidd, died age 23. There were two further men from this congregation in the regular army before the war, and they also died: Cecil William Grimshaw and Gerard Aylmer. We remember them today and hopefully always. And I'd just like to read a short piece, The Glories of Peace, just to remember peace today as well as those who have died in war. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. But they shall all sit under their own vines and fig trees, and no one shall make them afraid. I might just take a moment of silence to remember.
Slowly, did they play the fife lowly? Did their rifles fire on you? shame, the killing, the dying, 'twas all done in vain. Oh, we might cry, it all happened again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they play the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er you as they lowered you down? Did a band play the last host and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest?
Just to say that the two photographs in the on the table there, there's one in the centre, it's the William Cecil Grimshaw. The two in the other are the two boys remembered on this plaque, aged 19 and 22 when they died. For my reading today, I've chosen a piece. It's written by Danny Crosby, who's a Unitarian minister in the UK, and it's about the beauty of autumn, and the leaves are just so beautiful these days, I thought we'd share it. There's a special beauty about autumn. It is a depth that other seasons don't have in the same way. Spring is full of newness, springing into life. It's an exciting time, flighty time, a time when we have our heads in the clouds, perhaps, blown by the wind. Summer comes with long days of joy, of running free, perhaps for swimming in the waters of life. Winter has Christmas and a new year at its heart, a time for sitting by the hearth and being warmed by the fire. But autumn has a deep, deep beauty. It's about getting deep down into our roots, into the soil. It's a time for earthing ourselves, for going deep down within to reflect on the ground as summer ends and winter comes. Autumn is a time for reflecting on our memories. Everything seems just that bit more precious. Maybe it's because this is the time when things come to an end or begin to come to an end. Maybe everything is that bit more beautiful because everything is dying. It's an awareness of this, a real sense of this in my blood and right down in the marrow of my soul that helps me fall in love with life in a much deeper way. I feel a sense of love for every leaf that falls. As Walt Whitman once observed, every leaf is a letter from God. Every leaf teaches us something about life. We are leaves ourselves, everyone precious, everyone unique, and everyone will one day fall. It took me a long time to truly appreciate the beauty of autumn, but I'm finally able to. I did not always. In my teens and 20s, I did not see the beauty of its steady decline. My sensitive soul got caught up in its sadness as the days grew shorter and colder, and as the trees shed their splendor, all I saw was abundant beauty decaying and heading towards the barrenness of the cold, stark winter. As the color died, my spirit morphed into sadness, and I watched what was beautiful die. It seemed that the prospect of death consumed all beautiful life that was contained in this season of falling leaves. It wasn't until the second half of my life that I began to see the promise in each falling leaf. That in the autumn, new life is potentially being born. New seeds were being planted as the leaves were composted into the earth, preparing for a new life being born following the hope of winter. Now, as I settle into the second half of life, I feel a deep appreciation for autumn, both in nature's turning and in life's turning. I understand that we always live in liminal space, that life is always transitional, that life is always changing, being born, rising, flowering, dying, and being born once again. Youth was certainly wasted on me. Everything is beautiful because everything is temporary. Nothing lasts forever. Nothing stays the same. Aspects of life must fall and die for a new life to be born again. This humbles me. It draws me into the ground, into the earth, to my roots, to something beautiful. Autumn is the season for falling more deeply in love with life. Autumn is the season for the earth of the ground, for going deep into our roots that sustain us. Autumn is the season when we once again see just how precious everything is. Everything matters because it doesn't last forever. It is finite. Every drop of rain, every thought and feeling, every word and every action matters. Everything has to end. Everything must fall into the earth so it can create something new and beautiful to make room for new beauty to be born. Words from Reverend Danny Crosby. This next prayer needs an introduction. On the 14th of November 1940, the city of Coventry was devastated by bombs dropped by the Luftwaffe. The cathedral burned with the city, having been hit by several incendiary devices. The decision to rebuild the cathedral was taken the morning after the destruction. Rebuilding would not be an act of defiance, but rather a sign of faith, trust, and hope for the future of the world. It was the vision of the provost at the time, Richard Howard, who led the people of Coventry away from feeling bitterness and hatred. This led to the cathedral's Ministry of Peace and Reconciliation, which has provided spiritual and practical support in areas of conflict throughout the world. Shortly after the destruction, the cathedral stonemason noticed that two of the charred medieval roof timbers had fallen in the shape of a cross. He set them up in the ruins, and they were later placed by an altar made of rubble with the words, "Father, forgive," inscribed on the sanctuary wall. Another cross was fashioned from three medieval nails by a local priest. The cross of nails has become the symbol of Coventry's Ministry of Reconciliation. This is the prayer. Father, forgive the hatred which divides nation from nation, race from race, class from class. The covetous desires of peoples and nations to possess what is not their own. The greed which exploits the work of human hands and lays waste the earth. Our envy of the welfare and happiness of others. Our indifference to the plight of the imprisoned, the homeless, the refugee. The lust which dishonors the body of men and women and children. The pride which leads us to trust in ourselves rather than in God. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another as God forgives you. And this following prayer is short. It was found in the pocket of a child in Raven's book. Lord, remember not only the men and women of goodwill, but those of ill will. But do not remember all the suffering they have inflicted. Remember the good fruits we have brought because of the suffering. Remember our comradeship, our loyalty, our courage, our generosity, the greatness of heart which is grown out of all of this. And when they come to judgment, let all the fruits which we have borne be their forgiveness. We now have a time of silence for personal reflection. This morning's address, I'm just teasing out ideas of different types of courage. We continued the tradition of remembering the young men from this congregation who died in the First World War. We recall lives that ended before they had the opportunity to really live. The service is always an act of remembrance, a reminder of the cost of war. And I think it's interesting now that I think the memories of those young men are fading. We know so little of them now. We know William Wilkes Fitzgerald was an only child. The Faulkner brothers lost their lives within 5 days of one another, and their deaths probably contributed to the premature death of their mother in 1922. She was just 52. The stories of the other young men have faded. Their only legacy that we know of is the plaque in our porch. In 1914, these young men were told that they were fighting the war that would end all wars. They believed that the thing would be over by Christmas. It would be an adventure, an opportunity, perhaps to test their courage. Freddie Faulkner was decorated for bravery. He was awarded the Military Cross. In 1917, his troops were being targeted by a German machine gun, and Freddie took a few men to take the machine gun out. The few men he took with him were either killed or wounded on the way, and he just kept going on his own. He killed two Germans, and he took about 30 prisoners of war single-handed. I wonder, was that exceptional courage, or bloody-minded stubbornness? Or maybe it was just that he'd had enough of war, and it was a way out. The defining narrative of the Second World War was the systematic killing of Jews. At the end of the war, many Germans claimed to be ignorant of what had been perpetrated in their name. And they were, because the newspapers and radio and everything was under control of the regime. But some Germans knew, and some dared to speak out. Their acts of defiance weren't spur-of-the-moment decisions. They knew that they would endanger not just themselves, but their family members. They, with their family, many of them paid an extraordinary price for their speaking out. The dreadful crimes of the Second War that culminated in the killing of so many people began with a gradual process of repressing democracy. In 1933, Hitler built concentration camps. He bypassed the courts. The first prisoners in the camps were political opponents. Then he took, without political opponents, he was able to pass any laws he felt he wanted to. All opposition in Parliament was taken away. In incremental stage then, he went after the communists, the trade unionists, gypsies, men who were gay, and of course, people who were of the Jewish tradition. He took control of newspapers and radio stations. He took power in 1933. But the really big heave against the Jews took place in 1938. So there was 5 years where gradually the pillars of democracy were whittled away. In the years leading up to 1939, the Nazis silenced the opposition until finally there were very, very few willing to speak out. The killing began by targeting the most vulnerable members of society, the mentally retarded and the mentally ill. And of course, their deaths barely raised a ripple, but they were a stepping stone to greater horrors. There were some exceptionally brave souls who spoke out against the regime. One of those was, and not just individuals, but what struck me about these two examples I have is how the whole family suffered. One such family were the Skoll family. It was June 1942. A group of university students in Munich founded the White Rose Movement. This was a non-violent resistance group that called for active opposition to the Nazi regime. So they used graffiti and they produced anonymous leaflets. And these leaflets, there were 6 leaflets produced in all, but they were copied and sent to different cities. And they put them in phone books and books in libraries. They left them at bus stations. In all, they reckon there was only about 15,000 leaflets produced. But the courage to do that was amazing. In their second leaflet, and this is June 42, in the second leaflet they produced, they denounced the persecution and mass murder of Jews. So some people did know what was happening. Hans and Sophie Skoll were members of the White Rose group. Their parents were Robert and Magdalena. Robert and Magdalena had 6 children. One died in infancy. Of the other 5, there was Sophie and Hans. They were involved in the White Rose movement. And on the 18th of February, 1943, they took a bunch of leaflets to the university and they left them in the corridors outside for the students to come across them. Then Sophie went up to the atrium and dropped a bundle of leaflets that floated down to the ground. The caretaker saw her and informed the Gestapo. The university was locked down. Sophie and her brother Hans were arrested. Within 3 days, they were dead. They had been interrogated and found guilty. Neither of them betrayed the other people in the plot, in the White Rose movement. Their parents were told of their trial and they weren't allowed in, but the father shouted words of support when he heard that they were both found guilty and would be executed. Within 3 days of dropping the leaflets, both of them died by guillotine. Their parents and 2 sisters were arrested and interrogated. The father, Robert, was sentenced to 2 years in jail for shouting his words of comfort to his condemned children. And he was only liberated at the ending of the war. Their other son, Werner, was a medical officer serving on the Eastern Front, and he was reported missing, believed killed in action, in May 1944. So that's 3 children of their 5 who died in that war. Hans was 24 when he died. Sophie was 21, and Werner was 22. 3 young, beautiful lives snuffed out. Another remarkable story of family resistance was that of the Bonhoeffer family. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is probably the best known member of that family. He was a Lutheran pastor and one of these really intelligent people who got their PhD when they were about 16, you know. And it was his Christian faith that impelled him to oppose the Nazis. In 1940, he was offered a place to study in America, and he went there. But within 3 weeks, his conscience made him return to Germany to oppose the regime. He could have spent the war at a nice Ivy League university in America, but he chose differently. Over time, Dietrich became convinced that to save Germany, Hitler had to die. And we know that on the 20th of July 1944, an attempt was made on Hitler's life, not by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but he was associated with the people who did plant that bomb. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was in jail at the time of the attempted assassination. That made no difference. He was still held under suspicion and questioned and remained in jail. The awful thing was that in April 1945, as the war was drawing, it was within weeks of ending, 280 individuals suspected of being colluded in that assassination attempt were all put to death. There were 7 children in the Bonhoeffer family. The eldest, Walter, died in the First World War. Dietrich and his brother Klaus were both hanged in April 1945. And the husbands of 2 of their sisters were also hanged in April 1945. That war took a great toll on the Bonhoeffer family. Within weeks of the last hanging, Hitler was dead. Frederick Faulkner and thousands of other young soldiers showed courage under fire. Maybe for them it was a matter of kill or be killed. Maybe it was a spur of the moment thing, maybe it was anger. But individuals like the Scholes and Bonhoeffers, their family showed courage of a totally different kind. They knew what faced them if they were caught. Not just that they would be imprisoned and probably lose their lives, but also that they could be tortured. They knew that their deaths wouldn't be easy. There'd be no medal awarded for their courage. There would be financial and social consequences for the grieving families. They knew this, and yet they did what they believed to be the right thing. So we salute their courage. We remind ourselves to value our democracy, because democracy is not perfect, but it's the greatest safeguard we have. We must guard our democratic values. Stand for equality and the dignity of every person, who is especially the vulnerable. And on Remembrance Sunday, we must remember to honour the sacrifices made by people in earlier generations. Our notices. Thank you, Denise, and to Michael for leading our remembrance service, and to Fergus for the gorgeous song. There's no offertory. There is a donation box that you can put something into in the way out. And it's also possible to make a donation to the church via our website, and we thank everyone who does that. Just usually on Remembrance Sunday, we have a charity collection, and our charity was Medicine Sans Frontier. They're doctors who bring care to people in war situations. So if any of you felt generous, a donation to Medicine Sans Frontier is really needed and appreciated. And just to talking about courage and people at war, I know, you know, Rory Delaney's father-in-law was in the Irish Army when the Second World War broke out, and he decided he needed excitement, so he went over the border and went and joined the British Army, and he did his training, and he was given some leave, and he went home to visit his family, and the Irish Army arrested him for being absent without leave. They left him in jail for a few days or weeks, film time anyway. Then he was released and he went back to England and he was promptly arrested by the British for being absent without leave. They let him out and they sent him off to fight. He was fighting his way through Italy and he was taken captured by the German army and he spent the rest of the war in a German jail. And he survived to tell the tale. There's copies of Oscult magazine on the table outside and copies of the Inquirer as well. Please take one. Lunchtime meditation at 1:05 is open. The church is open for that. It's also available via the web camera. On Thursday evening at 7:30, our discussion group meet via Zoom. And we're talking about the first 7 chapters of the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. And everyone is welcome to join that. Tony will include the link in his weekly email. And the book club meet on the final Wednesday of the month, 6:45 for 7. They do it via Zoom again. And this month's book is Prisoners of Geography by Tim Marshall. Our blessing. Do everything with a heart that lets go. Do not expect praise or reward. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will have complete peace and freedom. Your struggles with the world will have come to an end. Amen.